Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. My co-host this week is Matt Harrison. It's been a while, explosive output.
Yeah, like 6 months.
That's a long time.
You know, I got to get warmed up for the regular season. The preseason shows. August is coming.
Yeah, you'll be back in full rotation in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, draft season, back when we were back to our two-hour Fantasy Football Weekly bonanza every week.
This is going to be one of our final two short versions. We're continuing our tour around the divisions in the NFL, breaking down each division and providing an outlook for what we expect this year from each of the four teams, and in this case, the NFC South, with breaking news on Michael Thomas. Mm-hmm. That just came down today. We record on Fridays, and we'll talk through that in just a few minutes. And that's the format that we like to use. As a quick reminder before we jump into the Carolina Panthers, mm-hmm. Matt, Guillotine League's up and running at guillotineleagues.com. And
I completed one.
Yeah.
I was in the Scott Fishbowl Super Guillotine League.
Super Chop.
Yep.
It's a very different experience there because it's a 12-team mm-hmm. draft. The Super Chop leagues are 12-team leagues, 12-team leagues, mm-hmm. 144 total players, but your league is just 12 teams. So you have a pretty regular feeling draft.
Yeah, you don't feel like you're drafting junk in the seventh round.
Right.
You feel like you're like, okay, this is a good fantasy team. I can go to war with this.
Yep.
So it feels good.
It does. The traditional guillotine league with 18 teams.
You get deep and you get dirty.
The guys at the bottom, you're like, ugh.
Why would I ever start this player?
Right. But the thing is, everybody's in the same boat.
Yeah.
And of course, with the guillotine league, one weekend, somebody's getting chopped, and here comes all that team. That whole roster's coming to the waiver wire, so your team gets better fast, but it's a very different draft experience.
Well, let me ask you, Charch, if you were in a guillotine league and you had the first overall pick, who would you pick?
Travis Kelce.
Okay. I would go Patrick Mahomes just because I feel so much safety with him. But Kelsey's definitely in consideration for me.
I can get a good quarterback.
That's true.
Much, much later. I can't get a good tight end.
You can't get one like that.
And I can't even, you know, if you think there's three really good tight ends, by the time I get back to pick one, they're all gone.
They're gone.
All three of them are gone.
They're probably gone first round, early second.
Yep.
So absolutely.
I could go Travis Kelce, and for the people that are just, I have to have a running back, you go Travis Kelce, running back.
Yeah.
And you'll be in pretty good shape.
You'll be fine.
Yeah. So that's what I would do. Check out the Chop podcast, by the way. That is our sister podcast dedicated to guillotine leagues. And our discussion, coincidentally, Matt, on this week's Chop is what to do if you're at the other end of that draft.
Oh,
what
sure.
What if you're in like 16, 17, 18? What's the draft strategy for the end of the first round?
Well, in my Super Chop, I was number 11.
Out of 12.
Out of 12. And I happened to fall into Patrick Mahomes, so I was delighted.
Okay, all right.
Patrick Mahomes there.
Well, yeah, if you consider him at one,
yeah,
then yes, you should be very happy
all
to get him there.
All for safety in the first few rounds of the guillotine
league. And see, if Patrick Mahomes... I think there's a coin flips chance he's sitting on a 50-touchdown season. And if you think that's going to happen, he gives you just like week in and week out bonanza points.
Well, I tweeted this a while ago. There's a year coming where Patrick Mahomes just blows up every record. It's going to happen one of these years. It has to. Is it this year? Is it next year? Like, but when is it? It's going to happen.
So I was just in Las Vegas, and I made all of my season-long Vegas bets. I'm in Minnesota. I live in Minnesota, and I can't make bets, football bets in Minnesota. So I placed all my season-long ones, and my bet on the Chiefs was not Chiefs to win the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. like 6-1. It was not their even money win total because you had to go over like 13.5 games.
Sure.
It's Andy Reid to win Coach of the Year, 20-1. The thinking being they could be a 15, 16, 17 win team.
And then
Andy Reid has to give it to Andy Reid.
Absolutely.
And I got him at 20-1 instead of like 6-1 to make the Super Bowl.
And Andy Reid doesn't have a good shot of winning Coach of the Year because they always seem to give it to somebody who's up and coming.
Yeah, right. That is usually how it goes. But if you win, it is Kevin Stefanski. Have you seen it? That is a good looking man. I can say that.
Okay.
Yes. All right. Anyway, a significant diversion from the Carolina Panthers, which might be a good thing. We're coming out of the gate with the least interesting of the NFC South teams, I think.
Well, I mean, we get to start with Christian McCaffrey, who by ADP is 1-1 overall.
Yes.
I actually have him as number 2 on my cheat sheet.
Who do you have as? And by the way, at shockfantasy.com,
yeah,
we encourage people to go there, all of your cheat sheets. Who do you have number 1 then?
I have Dalvin Cook as my number 1 player right now. But CMC, we've seen this before. He was 1-1 last year, mm-hmm. and he was probably the safest looking 1-1
yeah.
coming out of any year that maybe we've ever seen since LaDainian. And then, you know, he gets injured. He looked great in the couple of games that we did see him,
right.
but the downside is do we see another year of injuries? Because it was multiple injuries to McCaffrey, mm-hmm. too, last year. So there's more than one thing that can go wrong with him. So, I mean, we're going to talk the riskiest and highest upside plays, but put a pin in that guy right there because we're going to come back to him.
And one of the other real risks here for this whole offense is arguably the NFL's worst offensive line for the Panthers. So, you know, they're starting Pat Elflein at left guard.
Yep.
He should not be in the NFL. We saw him in Minnesota for a long time. He should certainly not be a starter. John Miller, Taylor Moten, Cameron Irving. I mean, they have scrubs up and down the offensive line.
And that probably played into the safety of Teddy Bridgewater last year, where, you know, little dink and dunk, high percentage throws for Teddy Bridgewater. They passed 59% of the time last year, which was top half of the league.
Yeah.
So, and that makes sense with Christian McCaffrey being a guy who can catch a lot of balls out of the backfield. Obviously, Mike Davis kind of filled that role last year. He's in Atlanta now. We'll talk about him later. But we got a new quarterback in town. That's Sam Darnold. He gets his second lease on life. He was the third overall pick in 2018 and started 13, 13, and 12 games in his three-year career with the Jets. So he had three games with more than two touchdown passes. That's
good. That's tough. That's tough.
I mean, it's Teddy Bridgewater-like numbers, but I think Darnold obviously gives you a little bit more upside. So the Panthers looked at him and viewed him as a guy who might be better than anybody they could get in the draft. Remember, the Panthers drafted 8th this last year,
and
they passed on Justin Fields.
They could have had both, which is what I would have done just to insulate yourself in case Sam Darnold doesn't work out, and you give Justin Fields a year to learn. And so that's what I'd have done. But, you know, Panthers. By the way, let me just – the Panthers, we were talking about the offensive line, except full of scrubs.
Sure.
They just signed Taylor Moten to a huge deal. Way overpaid him. He's like the 6th highest paid tackle.
Well, they must think he's pretty good.
They do think he's pretty good. But I still don't – I still think he's vastly overrated. But go ahead.
So upside for Darnold is definitely there. He's got a nice set of receivers. The 3 Panthers wideouts finished amongst the top 24 at the position last season. As a whole, they were top 10 in fantasy points as a position group, despite totaling only 10 touchdowns as a group.
Yeah, that is crazy,
isn't
it? That's
the 5th fewest, and the Patriots only had 4.
Yeah, well, that's Cam Newton
Cam Newton.
You know, I think from a passing game, the hope here is that fleeing Adam Gase will do for Sam Darnold what fleeing Adam Gase did for Ryan Tannehill.
Or anybody else who's
Yeah, there's some truth to that.
Curtis Samuel is gone, though. Mm-hmm. He's replaced by rookie Terrace Marshall Jr., who, of course, joins DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson as high-end wide receivers. Moore is the most expensive right now. His ADP is around the 21st wide receiver off the board. Some people really like him a lot more. There's DJ Moore Bobos all over the fantasy industry.
Yep.
And he's mixed in with some very intriguing names like Adam Thielen and Cooper Kupp right in that range in average draft position right now. In Dynasty, he's probably a top 10 wide receiver, but I don't know if I like this price.
To me, I can't have any Dynasty receiver in my top 10 when I can't tell you who the quarterback is going to be next year.
I completely agree. I've, downgraded most of my Steelers wide receivers for that exact reason right now. But DJ Moore's only had 4 touchdowns in each of his first 2 seasons. And then Robbie Anderson's going 3 to 4 rounds later, which seems like a pretty good value. He's at wide receiver 33 right now. Explosive exploded out of the gates with back-to-back 100-yard games last year. Tailed off was what was one of the better draft day steals of 2020. Pretty consistent. He finished with 95 catches and nearly 1,100 yards. And he's going in the range of guys like Jerry Jeudy, Tyler Boyd, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Cooks. Those guys are right in that range. So I think that Anderson's probably in a pretty good spot.
Now, what I like about Anderson, he's always been a deep ball guy.
Yeah.
And now he's got a quarterback who's got a deep arm.
And
Teddy.
Robbie Anderson's best season was with the Jets. Who was his quarterback?
Right.
Sam Darnold. There we go.
You take out the 100 or so touches that Curtis Samuel was getting.
Yeah.
And now I think Anderson's a pretty good value where he's going, as you mentioned, 3-4 rounds later than DJ Moore.
Yeah, and I mean, you have Terrace Marshall replacing Curtis Samuel, so some of that work funnels to Terrace Marshall, but he is a rookie. He's 6'3", had a 4.38 40.
Yeah, he's going to be a deep threat, too.
So he's going to be a deep threat, but do they use him a little bit like Curtis Samuel, maybe?
I just think Samuel's so unique in what he did, and there's just, you know, there are only so many guys in that Curtis Samuel, Percy Harvin, mm-hmm. Deebo Samuel kind of mold. That you can't just drop, and Terrace Marshall isn't even built like those guys.
Yeah, and then you can't spell Darnold without a D and an Arnold. And I'm sorry that Brian's not here to talk about his buddy Dan Arnold.
Right, because you know if he were here, we'd be talking about Dan Arnold as the obvious best player, most likely player to overachieve compared to his current ADP.
ADP is tight end 33.
Correct.
So
he probably will.
I think
do that.
I do agree with Brian on that point there. Last year he was tight end 21, mm-hmm. missed a couple of games and only saw 45 targets. And for reference, guys like Hunter Henry, Noah Fant, Dalton Schultz, Mike Gesicki. Dalton Schultz, Eric Ebron, they saw 90-ish targets.
Yeah.
So if you double Dan Arnold's output alongside his targets, so 45 targets into 90, mm-hmm. he's looking at 61 catches, 880, and 8 scores.
Well, and you know, it's not impossible.
I don't hate that.
You know, will he get 90 targets? I don't think so. But, you know, I think the point that Brian would probably make right now, were he here, the efficiency of Dan Arnold on the passes they did give him were very good. So, you know, maybe
number one in the league amongst tight ends for average depth of target, 12.6, and ninth for yards after catch per reception.
Dan Arnold. Some athleticism with him, but he's on his third team in 3 years. Teams don't keep him, but this a great opportunity. And the middle of the field without Curtis Samuel is now kind of wide open. And so, you know, I like Dan Arnold as my second tight end. I do.
Absolutely. And people were saying things like we're saying about Dan Arnold, about mm-hmm. guys like Darren Waller a few years ago, and the guys like Logan Thomas who kind of popped out of nowhere. Dan Arnold's a sneaky guy. I'm going to agree with Brian that he has the most upside possible. And I think it goes without saying that Christian McCaffrey drafting him at 1-1 or 1-2.
Yeah, riskiest player.
He is definitely the riskiest player because we saw what happened when it all goes wrong for Christian McCaffrey last year. Granted, if I'm still at 1-1 or 1-2 and he's on the board, I'm happy to take him. But if you are in my position and I'm at 1-1 charge, don't you feel like you want to trade out of that 1-1 this year, get to the middle of the first round and add some extra draft capital?
I think the middle of the first round is the place to be.
I do too.
That's the sweet spot of this particular year's draft.
I completely agree with you.
Everybody always wants to move up. I'd rather move back. And most of the time, if you're sitting at 1-1, 1-2, 1-3, and you offer that up to somebody who's sitting at 5, 6, 7, 8,
people.
Yeah, they'll give you extra.
Yep.
You know, they'll do more than just swap that. And by the way, the sneaky play on these deals always is, so you're sitting at 1-1, and you want to move to the middle of the draft,
mm-hmm.
only make it a 2-round swap. You don't need to make it an every round swap, just the 2-round swap.
Okay.
So, you know, now I've moved to the middle of the first round, in the middle of the second round, but I get like the first pick of the third round.
Yeah. There you go.
That's the sneaky angle on making that move.
That's the way to do it.
2-round swap only. All right. And I think that wraps up the Carolina Panthers.
That's all we need to talk about with the Panthers.
When we come back, we will talk about the, you know, let's talk Tampa Bay.
Let's talk about the Super Bowl champions.
Yeah. When we come back, we'll take a quick break. Fantasy Football Weekly resumes in moments. Welcome back. Fantasy Football Weekly, Paul Charchian, Matt Harrison with me. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at Paul Charchian. He is at Explosive Output.
That's true.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're all about the explosive output.
Oh, well, I mean,
hey, look, you can't take that Twitter handle and think that there's not going to be some repercussions.
Yeah. I understand.
Let's go to Tampa Bay. Bizarrely, Tampa returns every starting player and coach from their Super Bowl victory.
Mm-hmm.
This never happens. Never happens. It's unreal, really. Then there's little reason to believe that they're going to be any worse than last year. And this offense got better as the season went on and
sure.
was rocking in the playoffs.
Yep.
So the presumption is that they're going to pick up where they left off. And especially if they don't have ongoing injuries to Mike Evans, who played hobbled all year. Mm-hmm. Ongoing injuries to Chris Godwin. Tom Brady playing with a torn MCL all season, as we now know. So the hope here is that Tampa Bay's offense will be even better. And the weird thing is, Matt,
mm-hmm.
almost everybody in this offense has an ADP that feels too low.
Yeah, it feels like a team that you could definitely, especially in best ball, you could stack them very
really
easily.
Could.
Very
you
easily.
Really could. Let's start with Tom Brady. We're not going to spend a lot of time on him because everybody knows everything there is about Tom Brady. Healthy knee now, 40 touchdowns last year. Feels highly attainable this year. Again, especially if Evans and Godwin stay healthy. Downfield passing, though, is a growing worry. Last year, Brady finished 21st in completion percentage of passes 20 yards or longer and 29th in deep ball accuracy.
Okay.
But he threw the most deep balls out of anybody in the league, so he made up for it with just sheer volume of letting balls rip downfield, 94 deep passes last year. Now, the schedule is not very favorable. Most sites have got Tampa Bay with one of the hardest passing schedules in the league, but
okay.
At some point, you just don't care, and it's Tom Brady. He's going off the board at quarterback 9, and he finished as quarterback 8 this year,
mm-hmm.
and you feel like he should be no worse than that.
Yeah, I feel like he's probably a top 12-ish guy for sure.
He could. Again, the 40 touchdowns last year feel attainable again here. Let's go to his wideouts. For all three of these guys, I think the danger is going to be that there's just not enough balls to go around some games. So some games it's just not a Mike Evans game. Some games it's just not a Chris Godwin game. Some games it's not Antonio Brown's game. And so there's going to be some highs and lows for all of these guys because they're all requisite of over 100 targets.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, just some games aren't going to go your way. There gives them added risk in a guillotine format. But for most of us, we're going to ride out the low games because the high games will make up for it. And more often than not, these guys are going to be fine.
Now, do you think Charch, with Antonio Brown only playing half of the games last mm-hmm. year, his inclusion in the offense with a full offseason
yeah.
and his head in check and everything like that, do you think he makes more of a dent in the offense this year? And we looked at Mike Evans get right around 100 targets last year.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Godwin was injured for a little while, so he got under the 100 target mark. Are we looking at three wide receivers maybe at the 90 target-ish?
I think they're
mark?
All going to go over 100.
Wow. Okay.
I do. And let's talk about Antonio Brown since yeah. you brought him up first. So last year, as you mentioned, missed the first 8 games of the suspension. Then he had a knee injury in the playoffs. But if we look at that window between the suspension and the knee injury, once he got settled in, he was averaging 6 catches, 62 yards, and a little over half a touchdown per game.
Yeah.
That's pretty good production. And as a note, he had knee surgery in May, but he's mm-hmm. expected to start the season here. He's on a 1-year contract, so he's highly motivated. He's making only $3
million. He's only 33.
He's only
well.
Right. That's, yeah, he's 33.
He's
old.
Not
that's
at the not, tail end of
mileage.
His career.
It is. It really is. But he still feels third in the pecking order behind Evans and Godwin. And last year he had a disappointing number of low target games in which he really had some flop games built into him. Right now, his ADP is wide receiver 33 in round 9. A lot of other unproven receivers are in that range.
Mm-hmm.
He's a pretty proven receiver, if nothing else, obviously, Antonio Brown.
Through my early best ball drafts, he was mm-hmm. my highest rostered wide
wow,
receiver.
Okay.
Just
right.
because I kept getting him in like the 10th round.
Right, yeah.
It's like,
I know. I think there are people
the upside there yeah. is just there.
There are people who have just written off Antonio yeah. Brown completely, aren't drafting him, and I think that's an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk Mike Evans, who played all 16 games last year, but played hurt through almost all of them.
I feel like Mike Evans is the new Julio Jones.
It does feel a little that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't come to as quick a halt for Evans. emerged as an infrared zone beast with Tom Brady. 14 targets from inside the 10-yard line.
Yes.
Second only to Davante Adams, and he was successful with those targets, scoring a career-high 13 times last year. 15 if you include the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Evans only produced two games without a touchdown or at least 56 receiving yards, so he ended up being very consistent over the course of the season. And ultimately, Matt, touchdowns are a fantastic equalizer. You know,
touchdowns are king.
Touchdowns are king. You can offset the two-catch 20-yard game when one of them is a touchdown, and Evans had a bunch of those. So that is it's a great equalizer. His ADP right now is wide receiver 15.
Yep.
That feels a little bit low to me. We'll maybe talk a little bit more of that, about that in a minute. Chris Godwin had the hamstring and finger injuries that derailed a lot of his season last year. But remember, he was going off the board at wide receiver 7 at this time last year. And he's playing under the franchise tag, and that gives him extra incentive. And he's finally healthy. And now, and by the way, he was finally healthy by the end of last year, and he surged in December and January.
Yes.
During those 2 months, he averaged 70 yards and almost a touchdown per game. Week 15 through the Super Bowl, he was great. And Tom Brady's got that long history of feeding his slot receivers. Danny Amendola, Julian Edelman.
Absolutely.
Those are, you know, when healthy, Godwin should see a lot of targets. His ADP is 3 spots after Mike Evans, so they're going right next to each other.
Oh, which one's the value out of these wide
receivers? I know.
I mean, you said it at the onset. There's so much value in all of them.
It's
going to be really hard to pick the most upside player in this group.
Let's go to tight end.
Okay.
We've got another value opportunity
some big
here.
Value, I
so
think.
So Rob Gronkowski, you're drafting Gronk for touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Even with Evans hogging a lot of them, Gronk is still a prime guy for red zone use.
Yep.
44% of the red zone targets last year went to Gronk.
Okay.
Which is awfully, it's an awfully high number. His snaps are frustratingly low, usually around 50 to 55 per game, but that's still good enough to keep him on the field.
Taking
and
mileage
relevant.
Off those knees.
Yeah, exactly. It took him a while last year to get his feet underneath him after the year off, but if you look at Gronk from week 6 to week 17, he averaged 5 targets, 3 catches, 44 yards, and 0.6 touchdowns, and that's not bad.
Now, you have to note, though, O.J. Howard played the first 4 weeks and was the top tight end on that roster for the first 4 weeks. Then he got injured.
Yep.
He had 2 touchdowns in the first 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. Gronk had 0 touchdowns in the first 4 weeks. We could be seeing Tampa go back to O.J. Howard getting more snaps than Gronk on the field. That's my one drawback with Gronk this year, is that maybe he's only an infrared zone player, and
maybe
that's it.
Now, in the Super Bowl, which I have reason to believe is a really important game.
Seems important.
Gronk scored twice. And they went, you know, Tom Brady knows and loves Gronk. And I just think from it, if you want, for where he's going, tight end 12, I think he gives you a touchdown potential every single game.
Now, Tampa is not building their team to win us fantasy championships. They're building this team to win Super Bowls. They want to save Gronk
for the end of the
Super
year,
Bowl
maybe.
Because he's been injured so many times at the tail end of the year. I think they want to save him. It wouldn't surprise me if Gronk is used minimally in the first half of the season.
I like your contrarian thinking, and it's not impossible, but O.J. Howard has to come back from an ACL.
Yeah.
He's been an underachiever since being a first-round pick his entire career.
Okay.
Cameron Brate's also there, but Brate was really not a factor at all last year.
One touchdown.
I just think you have to know what you're in for Gronkowski. Standard scoring leagues, I think he's still very valuable. PPR, you have to show some caution on Gronk. All right, last thing, running backs. This turned into a very long discussion on Tampa. But it's such a meaty team. In June, so last month, Arian said he's got co-number one running backs. I contend neither one is a true number one running back and good enough to be a true number one.
Well, that's why he said they're
co-number ones, yes. Arians has always been the flakiest, flukiest, ficklest, and another F word that I'd love to drop right now. Head coach for running
funkiest.
Backs. Funkiest.
Oh.
Funkiest? Yeah. Funkiest.
Yeah.
Drafter either Fournette or Jones means that you are in a week-to-week crapshoot that you cannot see coming.
We could not forecast it last year. I remember so many times trying to figure out the Ronald Jones versus Leonard Fournette thing and simply read the tea leaves, saw the trends, focused on the trends.
And it didn't matter.
Then he flipped it.
Yeah, he'd flip it. And a lot of times it wouldn't even matter if the guy was any good.
No.
You know? So, yeah, let's start with Leonard Fournette. Improbably, he went from a player who was mostly on the bench during the regular season and periodically helping fantasy players and just periodically getting carries. And his usage was super low and weird. And then he crushed through the playoffs and put Ronald Jones on the bench. But during the season, he was bad. Just one 100-yard game, and it was sandwiched. So Fournette, this is so typical of Arians. He had the one 100-yard game. The game before that, 5 yards.
Yep.
The game after that, 15 yards.
Mm-hmm.
How are you supposed to guess that?
Well, and the problem is his 100-yard game came on only 12 carries. Yeah. So he had to break a few to make that 100-yard game. It's not like you're going to plan on getting 15 carries for either of these guys. You're not gonna feel comfortable starting a guy on the Tampa running game and feel like you're going to get 15, 20 carries.
Now, Fournette's always been this soft tissue injury guy, hamstrings and strains and stuff like that. The light workload kept him healthy for the playoffs. It's a little bit of your Gronk theory right here. And I wouldn't be surprised. This is probably my biggest contrarian take. Leonard Fournette's going off the board before Ronald Jones. Everybody remembers the playoffs.
Yep.
I think they're going to do the same damn thing. Ronald Jones is the better running back. Every single Pro Football Focus metric has Ronald Jones as the better back.
And you can get him later.
Broken tackles, positive run rate, yards after contact, pass blocking, every single thing. Ronald Jones a better running back than Fournette. And I think that that's going to yield Ronald Jones as the more reliable starter during the regular season.
Percentage of your fantasy teams that will have a Buccaneers running back on it this year?
5 to 10%.
Pretty low. Pretty low.
But it's going to be Jones. Fournette will be zero.
Okay.
Fournette will be zero. Offensive line is borderline awesome. They finished last year as the fifth best line. Everybody's back. Last year's rookie right tackle, Tristan Wirfs, was stellar. Their left tackle, Donovan Smith, has improved for seven straight years. The interior line is good. Ali Marpet's a standout guy, and they spent a third-round pick on utility lineman Robert Hainsey, who will patch any holes that may develop over the course of the season. So there you go. The offensive line's very good, setting the rest of that offense up to be very good in Tampa. The riskiest player at his current ADP, Leonard Fournette. Round 7, running back 33, and a disaster during the regular season, the mercurial use. I don't want any part of that.
From a risk standpoint, he's only the 7th round pick, though.
But he's running back 33. Yeah, there's better, way more interesting guys to me at that level.
Zach Moss, it's risky,
AJ
but
Dillon,
it's not that risky.
Gus Edwards. Yeah. I love those guys way more. And the player with the most upside to me is Chris Godwin. Top 10 upside in PPR formats, going at a steep discount because of last year's missed season.
I completely agree.
Let's take one more break.
Okay.
All right. We'll take one more break. When we come back, let's talk about the Saints without Michael Thomas for probably half the year.
Oof. Let's hope it's not half the year. Jeez.
Well, that's what we think is going to be the case here. We'll talk that through when we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Fantasy Football Weekly continues. Paul Charchi and Matt Harrison with you. It was already a tricky offense for the Saints because of the quarterback situation, Matt. And now knowing that Michael Thomas, the one steadying part of that passing attack, is going to miss what's expected to be at roughly half of the first half
of the season.
If we're lucky the first month, but then even if you look at what happened to last year, it dragged on and he didn't come back.
He was slow to go.
Slow to come back.
Yep.
Gosh, who knows? This thing is really frustrating. And so let's talk about an offense that's in major, major flux right now.
Yeah, so it's in major flux. But remember, we had the vaporized ghost of Drew Brees last year. It wasn't the real Drew Brees last year. It was some weird, bizarro version of Drew Brees that we'd never seen before. And he was injured, and we all thought we were going to get Jameis Winston, and then we got Taysom Hill. And
yeah,
now we're looking at those two guys battling it out for the quarterback position.
Can I tell you my opinion on this? And you can go.
Go.
Taysom Hill can't pass. And sooner or later, I need my quarterback to be able to pass. Yeah. And, you know, you hope to God Jameis Winston isn't the 30-30 guy that he was 2 years ago.
Oh, you mean 30 touchdown passes and 30 rushing touchdowns, right?
No, I don't. I mean 30 passing touchdowns and 30 interceptions, which is really hard to do to stay on the field. When you've thrown 30 interceptions.
There will be no quarterback ever again who throws 30 interceptions.
It's so hard. So
they have to have nobody else.
Yeah, well, that's part of it. And a lot of teams don't.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, Taysom Hill is a great utility, weird player that you can plug into different situations. And he can run, he can catch, he can pass, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But I just think you can't count on his passing. You never know when to start him, because if he doesn't run in a pass, if Taysom Hill does not run you a touchdown, he gets you nothing.
Yeah.
And it's a disaster for your fantasy team.
Is this looking to you, and maybe this is my read on it too, is Jameis Winston is the quarterback until they reach the red zone or the infrared zone.
Oh, and it then could be that way.
Taysom Hill comes in and gets, you know, three or four rushing attempts and five or six passing attempts per game. And it just cannibalizes all the value for Jameis Winston as well.
It could go that way. And, you know, it could turn Jameis into a 30-touchdown passer into a 20.
Yeah.
And that's then at 20, I've got Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, it's dagger right
Teddy,
there.
Well, Teddy has never hit 20, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, so everybody wants Winston to win this job. ADP reflects it. He's quarterback 29. Hill is quarterback 31. But again, we probably won't know who the starting quarterback is.
You might not know a week or day before the season, we might not know.
You might not know after the second drive of the game, of the first game of the season. Let's talk about the wide receivers, though. Michael Thomas was preseason wide receiver number one.
Last year.
Yeah. Obviously, the injury is going to stop that this year for sure.
I've re-ranked him at roughly quarterback 50 in regular leagues, and for guillotine leagues,
he's wide receiver 50?
Yeah, wide receiver 50.
Wow.
And basically undraftable in guillotine format.
Yeah, I think that's probably correct. Now, he was going mid-third until now. Mm-hmm. Now he's probably punished into the
10th.
10th, maybe?
Yeah.
8th? Maybe around that Leonard Fournette range where people are starting to take dart throws at running backs they don't like, and they go, oh, Michael Thomas.
Yeah, right.
Somebody will be dumb enough in a few leagues to go, oh, I'll take him in the 4th round. Yeah, sweet. But now Tre'Quan Smith is probably the top wide receiver on the board.
Oof, what does that say?
His ADP was wide receiver 73.
So I pushed him in about wide receiver 50 as well. He's very close to Michael Thomas now, just because, you know, and losing Michael Thomas hurts the whole offense. Mm-hmm. I mean, no part of the offense is better. They're going to score less touchdowns. They'll cross the 50 less often. They'll kick less field goals. I mean, every part of it's bad. But Tre'Quan Smith will see more passes.
Yeah, he only had 50 targets last year and was very inconsistent in his role with Emmanuel Sanders there as well.
Mm-hmm. And he's gone too.
If he can get close to 100 this year with both of those guys gone, I mean, he's probably teetering close to 900, 1,000 yards maybe and like 6-ish touchdowns.
Yeah, he's been so unreliable. Unreliable. Just the sheer volume, maybe it helps.
And then there's Deontay Harris, who's the other wide receiver on roster.
Yep.
I have to think that the Saints are in the market for the scrap heap of wide receivers who are let go for one reason or another during camp, or maybe they're involved in a trade. I saw a trade floated out there today. Latavius Murray to the Rams for Van Jefferson and a draft pick or something along those lines, which would be really interesting because Van Jefferson would instantly walk in and be wide receiver one on that roster.
You'd have to give up more than Latavius Murray. But
Latavious Murray and probably
but you
some
are
picks,
that's the kind of team you're looking for, a team that's deep at receiver, that's got somebody that they can movable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Adam Troutman's kind of an interesting guy. He's getting drafted right around Janu and Gronk right now at tight end 18. Troutman is the tight end one there right now. Jared Cook is gone. And tight ends have been heavily utilized in New Orleans, going back to Jimmy Graham and beyond, Jeremy Shockey with those flowing blonde locks. Since 2019, the Saints are one of five teams to record 20-plus tight end touchdowns. That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
And then Alvin Kamara. He's like probably the only guy that you can feel kind of confident drafting on your roster.
Again, I'll mention it, you know, losing Michael Thomas hurts everybody, including Kamara.
It does.
But, man, could he get a lot of use in this offense now.
Oof. Well, they did re-sign him to that giant deal last season. Yeah. So he's their bell cow. He's their workhorse. Mm-hmm. Although they've never used him as a true bell cow runner. He's only got one career regular season game with 20-plus carries. That was the Christmas double hat trick against the Vikings last year.
I will never forget it because I lost two championships playing against Alvin Kamara. You know, and that was on the Saturday game. Remember that?
Yeah.
And so you're rolling into Sunday going, well, I've lost.
It's over.
I got my whole roster to go, and I've already lost.
That game was also one of his two career games with 100-plus rushing yards. But
that's it. He's been amazing.
He's been an absolute monster in the passing game, and with no passing targets to be found.
They're going to throw to him a lot.
He might break the record this year for receptions by a running back. In the red zone, since 2018, he has the most red zone targets among running backs with 56. James White is second with 49, and Zeke is third with 36. But the two main concerns are, number one, Taysom Hill, who could snipe a whole bunch of red zone stuff for him.
And he did snipe a fair amount when he started last year.
Yeah, and you're also looking at Latavius Murray, who does get work near the stripe. But also, his biggest concern is they don't have any other weapons right now.
I know.
They got nothing else.
Defenses are going to show up with a game plan that just says take Alvin Kamara away and the Saints can't beat you.
Eight in the box and see what they can do. I mean, you got Sean Payton and you got Pete Carmichael, who are great offensive minds. They've been together in New Orleans for 12 years.
Yeah.
Maybe they can see this through. They did rank fifth in points per game last year, and they were fifth in run percent last year at 47%. So this might be the heaviest run offense in the league. So, I mean, Kamara, he's not the riskiest. Michael Thomas is obviously the riskiest play. But Kamara can be right up there in the risk value because you just don't have the confidence that he's going to get 20-plus touches a game, and you got to draft him at pick number four.
The player with the most upside on this Saints roster, in my opinion, and feel free to agree.
Sure.
Or not. you probably won't. Is Adam Trautman.
I think so, too.
You know, Adam Trautman, you know, going off the board at tight end 18, I've got him right now on my sheet after this injury. I believe I got him at tight end 11. I just think he's super athletic, and I look at the rest of this roster, and I don't see room for people to get a lot better than they've already shown. Trautman can get a lot better, and I wonder if how much of this offense is passing offense won't end up going to Trautman, and especially when Taysom Hill needs high percentage passes because he's not a good passer, and it feels like a lot of dump off stuff to the tight end.
Well, yeah, and Jameis Winston is an air it out kind of guy, so it doesn't. None of this stuff seems to make sense and play together where you can feel like you can forecast it really accurately this season. Maybe Will Lutz is the highest upside play, kicking 52-yard bombs.
Might have to. You might have to. Let's go to the Atlanta Falcons. A new coaching staff led by former Titans offensive coordinator Arthur Smith. But we can't automatically assume that Smith's going to be anywhere near as run heavy with the Falcons as he was when he had Derrick Henry at his disposal. But it's probably safe to assume that this team won't rank 24th in run percentage like they did last year.
It was a terrible, terrible stable of running backs last year. And
Gurley was so cooked.
Mike Davis looked a lot better than anything that they had last year.
He did, especially in the first half of the season. Mm-hmm. But I thought he really wore down. And we'll talk a little bit more about him now. Smith, by the way, Arthur Smith says he's looking back at Kyle Shanahan's schemes when he was offensive coordinator of the Falcons.
Okay.
Which is pretty smart. I mean, that was their Super Bowl year. And
at what worked here.
Yes, exactly. Even though most of the personnel has changed, but the one thing it hasn't, of course, is Matt Ryan. Mm-hmm. Statistically, last year he looked a lot like the Matt Ryan of the previous year, but if you watched Matt Ryan, you saw inaccuracy that we had never seen before, failure to diagnose and read plays that we had never seen before, missing open receivers. He started to look broken, and I am worried about his effectiveness at age 36. Particularly shaky with downfield passing. On deep passes of more than 20 yards, Ryan threw the most interceptions and four touchdowns. That's it. All year, four touchdowns was second worst among starters.
That's scary.
That is on deep passing, and that, and then you add in the loss of Julio Jones, obviously. That's significant. Will Kyle Pitts help? Probably, but not enough to offset Julio Jones.
Does that torpedo your value of Calvin Ridley?
Well, I'm glad you transitioned to Calvin Ridley. I think he's going to see a monstrous target share like most people do.
Sure.
Considering the quality of the other wideouts, and it's not new territory for Ridley, who was the go-to receiver. He was the number one receiver last year. With Julio Jones limping through the whole thing, he led the team in targets, receptions, yards, and touchdowns. So, you know, it's not like we're asking Calvin Ridley to assume the mantle of number one, and we don't know if he can do it.
Mm-hmm.
He did it last year.
Yeah.
He topped 100 yards in 5 of the 7 games Julio Jones missed last year. And
all right.
That makes me feel great.
Yep.
He averaged 11 targets in non-Julio Jones games last year.
And that's when teams were game planning for him.
Right.
And they didn't have a Kyle Pitts.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. He's a great downfield target. He led the league in both A-dot and air yards last year. Ridley did. He tied Justin Jefferson for the most 20-yard catches last year.
Ooh.
So, I mean, Ridley's great. You can defend a case to make Ridley wide receiver one. It's a defensible case.
Okay.
I don't have him there. I think I got him at 5.
Okay.
But that's a case you can make. Underwent offseason foot surgery. Didn't participate in the team's offseason program, but he's expected to be ready for training camp. Your slot receiver is Russell Gage, who figures to be third or fourth in targets, which makes him viable for a roster spot. He saw 109 targets last year. Russell Gage did.
Really?
Yeah, with all those Julio Jones missed games. I know. It does feel that way. 109's a lot.
Yeah.
Yes, he didn't turn it into much.
That's like what Mike Evans had last year.
He had one of the shortest A-dots in the league. Average distance of throws, and that was that's one of the problems that he had. When you're getting the ball at the line of scrimmage, it's hard to be meaningful with that. And
Absolutely.
That's how you only score 4 touchdowns on the season. But Gage has some real PPR upside.
Yeah.
And no way he's under the 109 targets he had last year.
Well, and adding a tight end like Kyle Pitts to that mix probably helps free up your slot receiver just a little bit more.
Agreed.
So I really like that from that standpoint.
The other starting receiver is expected to be a battle. Last year, it was Olamide Zaccheaus.
Mm-hmm.
Now in his third year after being undrafted, he doesn't do much for me, honestly. He did not seem to splash in any way I saw. And the worry here is that Kyle Pitts is going to be closer to a wide receiver than a tight end.
Mm-hmm.
And if he does that, then Zaccheaus is out of
Christian Blake or Cordero Patterson, who's now in Atlanta.
Right.
Yeah, those guys are probably.
Correct. So let's talk Pitts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you the storyline nobody wants to hear about Kyle Pitts.
I know what it is.
Yeah,
I've been doing radio with you
long time. Exactly. There's way more variation in possible outcome than people realize with Pitts. Even though he is a great talent and he looks as promising as any tight end that's come out in years. And by the way, I mean, if they basically just don't make him a tight end and they just let him play wide receiver, then I really like Kyle Pitts. And I think he can live up to his draft status. But right now his ADP is tight end 4.
Yeah.
4.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that.
And in Dynasty, he's tight end 1.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. For redrafts.
Yeah.
Dynasty redrafts, he's tight end 1. And he's in the conversation for the number 1 pick
in rookie dynasty drafts.
You can, you can take him first of all if you wanted to. He's got to battle Hayden Hurst, who is a good player and a veteran player who knows everything he needs to know about, how to conduct himself, how to pass protect, how to run block, and everything else. He has all the advantages of being a former first-round tight end. I mean, Hayden Hurst is not bad.
Yeah.
And remember, even though we have a new coaching staff, this is a team just 2 years ago spent a second and fifth-round pick to acquire Hayden Hurst.
Mm-hmm.
So they still want the front office would still like some return on that investment. And I think, as excited as we get as fantasy owners about the new exciting rookie, how many times are we frustrated at how long it takes for him to take over for the veteran?
Mm. Charge, can I combat you a little bit on this?
Oh, please.
Where was Arthur Smith last year?
He was in Tennessee.
And who was his really athletic tight end?
Janu. And I love Janu.
And how they utilized Janu in that
while
offense.
While he was healthy, utilized him a lot.
In a similar kind of thing where they had an alpha wide receiver in A.J. Brown.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Hayden Hurst, too many double H tight ends. Hayden Hurst becomes that blocking veteran savvy tight end who can be out there. But I think they use Kyle Pitts more like a little slash player, a little wide receiver, maybe a few runs out of the backfield like they did with Jonnu. Maybe he's just kind of that weird X factor. And because they're using him more as an X factor, he doesn't have the similar tight end rookie numbers that we've seen from years past.
So let's talk about the rookie numbers for tight ends.
It's awful.
It's not good. So tight end is a complicated position that takes most of the elite, even Hall of Fame bound tight ends, typically needed their third year to really have it all click. So let's talk about what history says. If we go back through two decades of first-round tight ends, their average rookie season is tight end 32.
Averaging 30
receptions, 358 yards, and two touchdowns. That is a disaster season. That's first rounders over 20 years. But you might say, whoa, this guy, Kyle Pitts, is way better than other first-round tight ends.
Yep.
So let's hone it into just tight ends taken in the first 10 picks over the last 20 years.
That's been a disaster because Detroit keeps taking them.
That average is somehow worse. Averaging 20 catches, 232 yards, and 1.5 touchdowns on the season. Tight end 50.
All right.
For tight ends taken in the first 10 picks over the last 20 years, that's their first season average.
Want to play an over-under game?
Sure.
Do you think Kyle Pitts will have over or under 64 receptions?
Over the last 20 years, one tight end has exceeded 64 receptions in their rookie year. So I will say under.
Okay. How about 722 yards?
Well, you're giving me Evan Engram's numbers.
I'm giving you Evan Engram's rookie numbers.
So I will say...
Do you think he has a better rookie season than Evan Engram's best tight end rookie season of all time, which was 64 for 722 and six scores?
I feel if they line him up as a wide receiver, and we don't know, then I think he can exceed those numbers and probably by a bit of a margin. But if Kyle Pitts is asked to play a more traditional tight end role, then he's just mathematically, he's very unlikely to hit those.
So if he gets just Evan Engram's rookie numbers and he's in line with the best rookie tight end season of all time,
then he's tight end. Then the tight end four is about right.
Yep, because then he finishes, if we're looking at last year's numbers, even with TJ Hawkinson at tight end number five.
Yeah, that's about right.
So
it's just, I realize nobody wants to hear this about Kyle Pitts. It's such a great story, and he's such a great talent, but
so he's
might
the biggest
be one
risk.
Year early. He's the biggest risk.
Absolutely.
He is. ADP of round four for a rookie tight end, he has to buck 20 years of trend.
Yeah.
To pay off on that.
Yeah, that's absolutely crazy. And considering TJ Hawkinson's going...
I'd rather have Hawkinson.
Well, I think that I would, too. I have actually Hawkinson ranked higher.
I do, too.
But the ADP's significantly later.
Lower.
You can get him a round or two later. And I think that you have safety. And Hawkinson, he's going to be just an absolute beast as far as targets this year in Detroit. So
earlier today, I talked to Dan Miller, the play-by-play voice of the Lions.
Yeah.
And we talked about this. Their wide receivers are horrible. Lions will be losing in almost every game, and Hawkinson's going to be a target hog. 130 targets for Hawkinson.
And Goff's not a big downfield thrower.
No.
Yeah.
And, if you're thinking, well, Goff's tight ends never did much, but if you were to have combined, we talked about this when we broke down the Rams a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. If you were to combine Gerald Everett and Tyler Higbee together into one tight end, you had tight end five last year.
It was a super tight end.
It was a super tight end. A robo tight end. Let's talk Mike Davis, and then we'll wrap this up. We're running long. We've already did our longest podcast yet.
Well, I like to talk.
It has. Mike Davis, probably the last of the workhorse running backs who's getting drafted. His competition for running back looks is Kadri Allison, undrafted rookie Javian Hawkins, and if Cordarrelle Patterson is a running back, then Cordarrelle Patterson. Super low mileage at 28 years old. 28 feels a little old for running backs, but he's had so little use. But he did wear down over the course of last season when they asked him to be the starter all year.
Mm-hmm.
I think his rushing is pretty average. He averaged only 0.09 yards over expectation by Next Gen Stats, and 3.9 yards per carry last year was pretty disheartening for Mike Davis.
Sure.
Positives are these. His positive run rate was 84%, so that was good. Mm-hmm. His broken tackle rate was 19%, which was good by league standards. And he averaged 2.7 yards after contact. Those are all positives. And he's a very good receiver, 59 receptions last year. But he only turned 59 receptions into 373 yards and two scores.
Okay. He's probably looking at a very low average depth of target last year with Teddy Bridgewater and the Carolina offense.
That is true.
It was probably a negative average depth of target.
It might have been. Now, Arthur Smith never threw to his running backs, but he had Derrick Henry there, so don't know really how much he'll throw to Mike Davis. But Davis is a good receiver, and the hope is that he gets at least the same 59 receptions that he got last year.
Plus, they've had the pictures floating around Twitter of, you know, the quads of Mike Davis right now.
They are epic quads. They're
pretty good quads right there.
Epic but, quads.
And he also has two knees, which the lead back also in Atlanta didn't have last year.
Exactly. Last thing I'll mention very briefly, offensive line below average, but not horrible. Jake Matthews is solid.
Mm-hmm.
Right tackle, Caleb McGarry, better in his second season, but still liability in pass blocking. Right guard, Chris Lindstrom, former first-round pick, very good. But overall, this is just a middle-of-the-pack line, and they have to replace veteran center Alex Mack, who went over to San Francisco, and one of the reasons I'm so excited about that San Francisco offense this year is Alex Mack now being there. They're going to ask a rookie, probably Drew Dahlman or a sophomore, Matt Hennessy, to play that. And they're totally green.
Mm-hmm.
So something of a worry there. So your riskiest player at ADP is Kyle Pitts. The player with the most upside, I think, is Russell Gage, wide receiver 55, and could be sitting at 120 targets. And
you'd
maybe
think,
more
think
than
it's
got to
be a little bit of an uptick from last year. And I didn't know he had 109 last year. Where'd that come from?
Where did that come from? Great job.
Thank you.
To have you back on the show, man.
Yeah. Hey, shockfantasy.com, promo code CHEATER.
Cheater?
Cheater.
Okay.
Yeah. That'll get you a year-long membership to Shock Fantasy for only $25.
All right. Well, with that discount, it does feel like I'm cheating. I'm cheating the system.
Cheating the system and getting your cheat sheets.
I like that.
Yeah, there you go.
Outstanding. Shock Fantasy. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week to break down the NFC North, our final of the divisional breakdowns. And we'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.